Hello and welcome back to another episode of the EFL Freezer Crowd podcast. As always, I'm joined by resident Millwall fan Andy.
Good evening, all.
Evening. And Luke.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
Good.
Yeah. All right.
In a week where Birmingham channel their inner Swansea, Max Power channels his inner Kevin Ellison, and Lucas Yao channels his inner Englishman playing their first game of five-a-side after months of lockdown. Welcome back to the pod. Well, with the international break, we've had a severe lack of Championship football and it was back with us this weekend. A good Friday, full host of fixtures. And I think we'd better start with two teams going up against each other in the race for that top six position. Barnsley against Reading. Had a little bit of everything, I think.
Yeah, these are two teams that we've spoken a lot about this season, which suggests that they are doing well. They are teams to talk about. They must be, because we don't talk about too many teams on this show. So, I mean, it was, and I think it delivered. Some people weren't too impressed with it, but I think it delivered. It was sort of Reading sitting back on the counter. They've got that superb front four who are really playing well. And then Barnsley playing their sort of direct football, trying to create chance, but weren't really doing it. And it fell to the key man. Ajaria got the scoring underway. I mean, he was in my team from last week, and there was a reason for that. And I thought, what a way for the week to start that someone in my team scored the first goal. So,
and the way he plucks it out of the sky as well. He's clearly been listening to you, Andy.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that. I said, good player. I would have had Michael Olise, but he's French.
Plucking it out of the sky, and I know you've said that, and then Andy, you've obviously said about Barnsley's direct style. I hadn't quite realised just how direct they were. It felt like for a lot of the game, you were waiting to see if the ball was going to come down with snow on it. I'm not sure whether that's something they usually do, but God, it spent a hell of a lot of time up in the sky, and people like DK were having to do a hell of a lot of leaping into the air, trying to flick the ball on. It wasn't that attractive from Barnsley, but I suppose it's been effective.
Yeah, this is something that is sort of forgotten. Barnsley, they play this like gegenpressing football, you know. They're really high pressing, but they do actually play a fairly direct game. It isn't the best to watch sort of football. It was entertaining, which would go against that. But I mean, it's exciting, but it's not your tiki-taka type football. But it's worked for them. And I think Reading knew obviously all about that in that game, as they should. And they sort of sat back and hoped for the best. I think it was sort of attack v defence after Ajaria scored. And it was only a matter of time until Barnsley finally did get that, although it was a penalty, that equaliser.
I think we've talked long enough now about that fixture without mentioning the moment that all of us are desperate to talk about. We have a goal of the week on this podcast, and no doubt we'll have a goal of the season. But we're definitely now having a miss of the season after this weekend. How on earth has Zhao put that wide? Anyone?
I can only imagine it's because he thinks he's offside. Being that far in front of the defence, he must think he's offside. It's just a lacklustre swipe at it. And then got his shirt over his head because it's just such an appalling effort. And the fact that that can be the difference when you're going for playoffs, that's huge. It must be the worst miss of the season.
Yeah, Luke, I've I thought that as well on first viewing.
But, don't try and back this up.
It's like detective work here.
Watches two replays.
Yeah, no,
yeah. Yeah, it's bad
as soon as he missed it. The way he hit it, yeah, bent coppers. The way he hit it, the way he hit it was so bad. I mean, anyone could have scored that. Anyone. So I assumed, like you said, that he thought he was offside, and he just like casually just hit it for a laugh. But then the way, The way he reacted afterwards, he doesn't look at the linesman. He doesn't know. He then just puts his shirt over his head like he's that gutted. He cannot believe he's made such a rookie error. I think it could be up there with one of the worst misses you've ever seen. Because you see these ones from a yard out where it's come at them quickly. Fair enough. Might just hit them, go over. That is just...
That's a pass into an empty net.
I'm actually not good for the pod, but I'm speechless.
If he does think he's offside, then he needs to go and learn the rule. He's coming onto the ball from it. He's not offside. No, he doesn't think he's offside. His foot is just shaped wrong. Again, I'm speechless. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. It's one of the it is the worst miss you've ever seen. There's Yakubu, and then there's that. That is absolutely horrific.
Yakubu in first, or?
No. Yakubu's looks good compared to that.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. Like you said, Luke, it's going to be one of those ones which, if those 2 points are vital at the end of the season, like Lucas Yao's going to have a little look at himself there. Although he's having the season of his life and, you know, doing well. You can't do that. You absolutely can't do that. And Barnsley have well and truly got away with one there.
We talked there about two teams who are in the hunt for that top six spot. And I think we're at the point now maybe where we have to admit that Swansea are looking like they're probably only going to be finishing in the top six. There's another big game for them this weekend. And on the end of another poor result against a Birmingham side who, let's be honest, haven't been great this season, but are looking like they're really putting up the fight down the bottom.
Yeah, we talked a few weeks ago about all the lucky penalties that Swansea were getting and how it was driving Warnock mad. But Birmingham have managed to get two in a match. Two in a match against Swansea. Is this their just dessert, Swansea? Is this what they deserve?
Yes. We've made that sort of joke before, haven't we? About how Swansea, I believe I called them the most hated team in the league for a bit, which was a little bit harsh. But, you know, I mean, I felt it and no one on the show disagreed. So I think that was something. But what was more interesting to me was Lucas Chukwuka's penalty. And it's in a new segment that I like to call When Troy Deeney Penalties Go Wrong. You rarely see it, do you? He smacked it as hard as he can down the middle. And Woodman, another player who I had in my team last week, saves it. Just pretty much doesn't. Yeah, sorry, I forgot to close brackets. And it's just is it a little movement from his knee, but he doesn't need to do much. That is a great sight in football, isn't it? The smack down the middle and the keeper not moving, and he saved it. And James, did you jump up for joy when that happened?
Yeah, Jukovic is someone who has got a place in my heart. Ex-Coventry, did a great job for us. And then when you see him standing over a Birmingham penalty at the Tic-a-Taca Trillion St Andrews Trophy, whatever it's called, stadium.
The Trillion Dollar. Yeah.
The Boyle Sports Sky Blue Army, Luno's Arena.
The League One.
The biggest ground in League One. I think, yeah, when he's standing over it, you just don't want to see it. So, yeah, when Woodman does that little knee and saves it, you're absolutely chuffed to bits. Obviously, not so happy when they get a second one later on. I don't know if you saw Djukovic's celebration when Hogan scores the penalty, but it's absolute relief. And he can't quite believe they've got a penalty, first of all. And then he goes nuts when it goes in. Safe to say, I was going nuts in a different way. not too pleased this weekend. We actually mentioned, just a quick one there, mentioned the stadium. Some weird twist in the Birmingham events this week was that their owners have actually sold the stadium and then renting it back. It's just like, we've agreed to leave St Andrews and we're just still trying to keep some sort of link between the two clubs going on. Two clubs now renting stadiums and not doing very well. But yeah, great win for them this weekend, and worryingly for me, it looked like they're actually putting up a fight under Bowyer.
Yeah, and on that, I think we should probably stay with the teams at the bottom. Birmingham A win that I didn't see coming, judging by our predictions last week, as you would have heard, listener, and I don't think many would have seen coming. Let's stay at the bottom. Why don't we go to Coventry next? A game that it's almost, in the grand scheme of things, just didn't matter after the other results, and you were sort of just waiting for the other results to come in and help you, because, I mean, that game was an absolute write-off, wasn't it, James?
It was. So on to Rotherham. it was a bit of a painful one, to be honest. You get the international break that's come in and given us a bit of a rest, similar to the Accrington Stanley much needed rest. We've absolutely been put to bed after the little break. A few fitness issues looked like we'd got over them. Start with Godden, the fan base is going absolutely nuts with that. 3-0 loss, concede after 30 seconds, score an own goal. I'm not even sure we registered a shot on goal, to be honest. It was woeful from start to finish. There's a few things that are starting to concern me now, more than the fact that we're not creating enough chances. I don't want to say it, but I'm not sure we're getting out of this mess anytime soon. I think that makes us 4 wins in 21 games now, which by anyone's standard is absolutely horrific. You may need to check that stat, but I'm sure it's something like that. We keep calling for two up top, and I still stand by that being something that we need to do, be a bit braver. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Robbins said that against the QPR side, if you play two up top, then you get passed off the park. I checked out who had played two up top against QPR. Huddersfield, twice, beat them both times. Barnsley also played against them with two up top, beat them. All at home as well for QPR. So clearly you can play two up top against QPR and win. But apparently we had an injury to Biamu who needed injections. Walker's not looked fit all season, but for me, he won't get fit until you start playing him. Godden probably rushed back into the team. A midfield of people that you're expecting to play better than they are. People like Matty James, who's got the pedigree, but for me, hasn't performed as well as I would like him to since coming in. Gus Hamer was everyone's hero up until January. Whether he's had his head turned in the window, whether he's can't be arsed anymore, I just don't know. He's not there. Without the midfield base playing well enough, you can't get someone like Callum O'Hare into the game. I think you know where this is going. I don't see League us one. Escaping the drop.
Yeah. It's not going up.
Exactly.
Is it?
Yeah. More conversation this week about whether we should keep Robbins as a manager or not. Before anyone asks me, I think it would be harsh to sack him, but I don't see this ending well for us, to be honest.
Yeah, you say that, James, but I mean, pretty much every other team down there, bar Rotherham, has had a change of manager, haven't they? And it does seem to be making some sort of effect. I mean, Rotherham are in a completely different scenario, aren't they, with the COVID games in hand. So although it would be incredibly harsh, if you'd say that if you were in the Premier League in that situation, a team would do that, no doubt, would make a change of management. I mean, Coventry have won just two more games than Wickham have this season. I mean, we're all laughing at Wickham, and that's just two more wins.
But not anymore.
Well, yeah, we were. Well, some of us still are, but yeah, I don't know. QPR are one of those teams, going back to the game, where they've got nothing to play for this season, realistically, and they play some good football. We saw them against Millwall come from 2-2 down at half-time to win 3-2. So, I mean, they can put these performances out of nowhere where they feel free to pass the ball around, and if a team lets them do that, they're going to do it. And I just, Coventry must have had a real lack of fight in that game to lose 3-0 when the other team doesn't have anything to play for and you're fighting for everything. It's really disappointing at this stage of the season.
You've got to give credit to Warburton because, like you said, Andy, they've got nothing to play for. They're safe. This run in 2021 is so impressive. They're one win off of their total for the whole of 2020. So you've got to give credit to him because they're playing I think it's the effort most of all. They want to win games, whereas some of the teams they come up against just don't seem like they want to. And they take advantage.
We've mentioned before that this is the sort of team QPR are. QPR are. Weird thing to say, yeah, that's the sort of team they are. It's like when they do have nothing to play for, they can put on a performance like that. So I mean, it's just unfortunate that it's come against Coventry that week.
just to sort of, yeah, tie that up, really, they are the kind of the side that maybe shackles are off a little bit. They've got a few flair players who, without any pressure on them, are willing to kind of express themselves a little bit more. Let's be honest, on paper, that QPR team is very good. They are a good side. They've got a little bit of everything as well. When you watch them, they're pretty sturdy at the back, especially in this run at the moment. But then they've got people like Chair. They've also always got an Austin on the pitch who can score goals from virtually nothing. 12th, actually, sort of doesn't almost do that squad on paper justice. And the run since Christmas is almost what I expected more from them at the start of the season. But like you say, when there is nothing to play for and you're a team who are, well, supposed to be fighting but clearly aren't at the moment, you can't concede that early, and then you can't collapse when you do. We've got way too many problems at the moment in terms of just the thing as well. I would just like to see a little bit more consistency in the squad. There's been chop and changing at the back. Okay, it doesn't help when McFadden gets sent off every other week, but you've also got this goalkeeper problem where it doesn't look like either of the goalkeepers know how to play in goal anymore, but changing them around doesn't fill anyone with any confidence. Chop and change the striker when one looks in form, bigs one of them up one week and then drops in the next. It stinks of a club in crisis. There you go, I've said it. I don't know. I'm not sure we're built for it. We've got quite a few players who, when it's going well, can put a foot on the ball and knock it about and it looks really nice. But I'm not sure that we've got enough players in there who are willing to chuck their bodies on the line when it matters.
That's an interesting phrase you used there, James, because I believe that's the exact one you used last week about Derby County, who actually came away with a win last week. A little bit of steel, maybe. And I think you're right, Coventry, the way you play football just does not work when it comes to trying to survive, does it? You want to have a little bit more steel again. And it's going to be very difficult, isn't it? I think after that, after those wins for the other team down the bottom, you'd think it's just really Birmingham and Rotherham now involved. You'd say Forest and Derby are gone. This is going to be a really interesting last eight or so games of the season.
Unfortunately, it's going to be interesting for everyone but me. I just sort of want it over now.
No, well, surely it'll be even more interesting. But not
you say
in a good
that,
way.
I'm not very good at this sort of thing. I just sort of shut my eyes and hope for the best, which seems to be like a tactic taken up by the 11 on the pitch as well.
Or Lucas Shaw.
Yeah.
No, but in all seriousness, I think this is something we've discussed outside of the podcast as well, is Rotherham with those games in hand is going to be interesting to see how they get on. But that there's a massive game. Coventry against Rotherham in that kind of on the Thursday night is absolutely massive. I think, Andy, you called it a cup final when we spoke about it earlier. If results continue to go in the way they are, then when we play against them on that Thursday night, it is going to be a huge game. And anything less than a win for Coventry leaves us massively vulnerable. So without overdoing it, let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, well, why don't we move on to... well, let's not move on. Let's stay on Rotherham.
So, wonder why he wants that.
Well, I don't really, because I have to talk about how Rotherham pretty much outplayed us in the second half and should have won comfortably, even with 10 men against us. But let's talk about it. But this is going to be part of the problem, I think. Like I said, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a Birmingham, Rotherham and Coventry fighting for that last spot, or fighting against that last spot, as everyone else, I'm sure, is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We are fighting for
sick
it.
Of this.
Well, it looks like some of them are, yeah. One of them is. But yeah, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but Rotherham really did look quite good, especially in the second half against Millwall. A game that you say QPR have nothing to play for, we don't have anything to play for, Millwall, that is. And we're pretty average first half against Rotherham, and then the red card, absolute definite red card, Jed Wallace running through one-on-one, brought down. Don't think anyone could complain about that. And then not long later, Jed Wallace scores an absolute peach of a goal. And that seems to be the problem we have, actually. Nice problem, but a problem. Where it takes something special for us to score a goal, or it takes a really scrappy moment. Not to sit here complaining when we've just heard from the Coventry fan opposite me on the camera there. But... I think the problem is that Rotherham looked really like a team that were fighting for everything, and they had us on the ropes the second half. And they're obviously with 10 men, they should have really got something out of that game. And it doesn't look good for the other teams down there if they're going to play like that. Obviously, I'm building up to the absolute moment of the weekend, which was the last-minute penalty save from Bart, which we were all celebrating on the podcast.
He says last minute, it was 85th. Last minute. Yeah.
When it comes to penalty save, that is last minute.
It was a last minute by the time I'd stopped celebrating it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it was about an hour ago. Yeah, but
let's not gloss over that penalty save, by the way, because that is absolutely unbelievable. It's hammered. Well, I'll let you do it. I'll let you talk about it. You deserve it.
Oh, God. That's something.
You're talking like Andy saved it.
No. I've shouted at him enough from behind the goal and said, you know, be stronger with that right wrist.
No wonder he didn't say
that. That was me to Mary Berry. I'm sorry. Behind the tent. This guy is really kept. You can say all you want about our defence. Just a quick moment there for, I haven't got the stats, but Sean Hutchinson actually went off injured. And that was the first game where he hadn't played.
First minute he's missed, yeah.
Since
the beginning of the season.
Ever.
No, it's a lot. It's about 60 odd games, I think, which is incredible. Yeah, so shout out for him. And yeah, so but what I was going to say is for a goalkeeper, I think our defence gets a lot of plaudits, but he has kept us in it so many times this season. And that save was just, I mean, there's penalty saves and then there's that. That was ridiculous. I mean, it's like he doesn't dive till after the player's even hit the shot, yet he still gets his wrist down there and just smacks it away as if it was just... he was playing beach ball or something on the beach, which would where, obviously where you would play that.
I do think 90% of goalkeepers just let that flap through their cardboard hands. But it's the reason it's such a good save is that if they get there, it just goes through their hand. That's what's so impressive about it. I think we're talking about the best goalkeeper in the league now.
Yeah, it's sort of like it's something you want is the best goalkeeper in the league. But when you're in 10th, it's a little bit like, yeah, you've got the best goalkeeper in the league. If you didn't have him. I'm pointing down, by the way, on the camera.
And that wasn't the only save of the game. I mean, he does just swat that away like a little fly, as if it's not even been hammered from 12 yards out. But there's also
a little fly.
He makes an unbelievable save again, strong hand down to the bottom corner from a header. It's just so impressive that he gets down low that quickly, but also has the strength in his wrists to keep the ball out. And I think I have to agree with Luke. From what I've seen of him over, well, not only this season, but the last couple, the best goalkeeper in the league. People talk about Woodman, clearly good goalkeeper, and the David Reyes of this division, but I've not seen anyone better than Bart. And he's proved it again this weekend. And maybe I'm just saying that through rose-tinted glasses because Andy's Millwall and I wanted him to save that penalty more than I've wanted anything in my whole life. But still, he's an unbelievable goalkeeper.
What a life. No.
No. More than promotion last year.
No, I did have a conversation with my old man who's been supporting the team since the late 60s. And he said that there can't have been too many. Yeah, I think he picked one above him, Brian King, who played for England a long time ago. So, yeah, high praise. And I think about time he got a bit of praise on this podcast because we do like to get goalkeepers stick.
Power. He's the man whose name you'd love to touch, but you mustn't touch.
Max Power.
Yeah, we've done that.
Everyone's new hero, Max Power, channeling his inner Kevin Ellison, as I said earlier. And as much as I want to talk about the football that happened at the weekend, when something happens like what happened in the Sunderland against Oxford game at the weekend, you've just got to talk about it. And before we go any further, I would just like to say, of course, this is a police matter. And this is pure speculation. And don't hold us to anything we're about to say. Pile on in, boys.
Right, now we can say whatever we like.
Technically, you cannot libel when that's been said before. Bets on who's done the headbutt. And it wasn't Kevin Muscat. Because he wasn't there.
That's what you think.
What I love about the whole who's done it thing is that Lee Johnson immediately distances himself from it by saying I was in the toilet while it was all happening. Yeah. It's just no one can prove that. Yeah, how convenient is that? It's just like, no one would have seen him in a crowd anyway, so he could say what he wants.
Johnson's got his defence sorted already. Well, in more ways than one.
Who headbutted clever. Jack Stevens, part one.
The new Who Killed Mr. Burns.
That noise meant didn't need saying.
That noise meant obviously that's what I was getting at, for God's sake.
Exactly.
God's sake. But, I mean, for a show that does about 18 always seems to be the number I say for some reason, that does about 25 Simpsons references a show, when Max Power does something like that at the end, I mean, it's just an absolute gold mine, isn't it?
I mean, a gift, an Easter gift.
Yep. Home to the Max. 13th episode of the 10th season, February 7th, 1999.
He'd barely finished the knee slide and I was downloading the soundbite.
Should we get onto the game a little bit before we get to the, halftime antics and then the Max Power antics as well? I mean, I was happy in the first half when James Henry, a really good player, right winger of that division, scored a lovely goal into the bottom corner. And everyone's thinking, oh, has the Sunderland bubble burst? Has the Lee Johnson bubble burst? All it took was Jordan Jones on loan from Rangers. Just, I'm not sure how he's ended up there. He looks a little bit above that division, doesn't he? And that skill for the equaliser was incredible.
Yeah, I have to agree. It's one of those that, I guess when the signing's made, you don't really know who they are. You go, oh, that could be good. And then you're getting towards the end of the season and you're thinking, yeah, that was an absolute coup from them, particularly under a manager who looks like he's getting the best out of his players. But yeah, it was a massive game for both teams, really. Sunderland, as we said last week, for me, still looked like the favourite to probably win the division. And Oxford still got an outside chance, really, of getting up there and getting amongst it. So you're sort of thinking, yeah, when Oxford go 1-0 up, chance here. And then, yeah, for Sunderland to take it in the way they did, they've just got a little bit too much, haven't they? I think they're finally using a few of their players to their strengths. People like McGeady on fire. But yeah, they just look too strong for Oxford ultimately. And I think another thing as well is, I know you want to talk about the antics after we talk about the game, but sometimes it comes down to who's got the coolest head in those moments. And I think if you could come out after a half time when that's happened and still control a game of football, then to be honest, there's only really going to be one winner, isn't there? One team clearly still playing on their minds. One team come out willing to play a game of football and win it. Come away, three goals, happy days.
Yeah, that's a really surprisingly level-headed way you've said that, James, because I wasn't quite expecting it there, especially when Sunderland were the team you were praising. But I think before we get to the end, I think we have to quickly mention the red card as well. No idea how the first tackle is a yellow card. I think that was partly with some of the reason why Carl Robinson was sent off at the end. Unbelievable decision to book him for the first one. And then second one seemed a little bit harsh, where he was going for the ball when it was free in the box. But then, I mean, yeah, like you said, it is the team that reacts the best. And Lee Johnson calmed his players down. Carl Robinson fired his up. And it didn't quite work out that way, although Max Power looked like he was fired up when he sealed it in the last minute.
Well, rumours were that Carl Robinson, and I'm going to have, please, Lord, let me bleep this out. Apparently he called the ref a and that's why he was sent off.
Say it again.
Yeah. Okay.
So when you talk about keeping your head, then he's clearly lost his. His team have lost it as well. And that's why they've come away on the end of a defeat.
I don't want to suggest that calling the referee that word is justified in any way. But what? And I've never done it myself. I think if you look at the goal that he's referring to, there is an Oxford player down, injured, when he blows his whistle. And then he blows the whistle again, the ref, to restart, whilst the Oxford player is still down. You shouldn't be doing that, in my opinion, and Sunderland score straight from the set piece. I would be annoyed. I think he's got every right in that situation. Like you said, boy, has it boiled over at halftime and at the end as well.
I think there's a few things, aren't there? And as someone who is well known for being level-headed on a football pitch and never really loses his cool.
Who are you talking
laughing
about?
For?
Oh, you!
No, I think that's, I would be feeling ridiculously hard done by if I was Oxford. Like you say, the ref, you can't do that. You can't do that in any game, let alone a game that's clearly already got a bit of controversy going on. Also, Robinson's claiming that he's seen one of his players be headbutted at half time, just to pile on a little bit more misery. He's then said that the opposition manager, Lee Johnson's having a pop at the ref every couple of minutes. He gets away with it. And then he shouts at the ref and gets sent off for it. I think it starts to build up, doesn't it? And sometimes you just get caught up in it all. I say sometimes, for me, that's always. But I just think, yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? It's hard to take, I think, if you're Oxford. But ultimately, you're professionals. If you want to get out of the division, you've got to try and keep a cool head at some point, and they've not been able to. And to be honest, I'm absolutely over the moon with the situation, because it's everything that this podcast thrives on. A halftime headbutt, a last-minute knee slide and scream in front of the opposition's bench. What more can you ask for? And that's not even mentioning someone called Max Power. So it just keeps on getting better, doesn't it?
What you failed to mention there, James, some of the greatest post-match interviews as well from that game. Unbelievable. Do we want to get to that yet, or are we finished on the game?
Yeah, let's hit it.
Shall we hit it? I don't know where to start. I wanted to first say that Carl Robinson was so frustrated with the headbutt and saying that it was so severe and everything. Yet their goalkeeper did start the second half as well. So it must have been really severe. He started in goal for the second half. And I've written down here one of the greatest. greatest lines. Here we go. Carl Robinson. There's a few typos.
Yeah, don't mess this up.
There's a few typos, actually. Some bad ones. When did I write this? These lot have had the most TV cameras of any football club in the world for the last 2.5 years, yet there were none at half time. And I thought, you know, it doesn't matter if he's right or wrong there, you know. He's had a pop at the Netflix show, which is what everyone wants. And then... I mean, having a pop like that is just so, it's so easy yet so right. And then you're like, and it was just followed up by Johnson. He claimed at the end, our Sunderland team are a classy side. And I just wanted to get James Levitt's opinion on Sunderland being a classy club. So, any thoughts?
Thoughts, where to start, thoughts. There's a few thoughts, actually. A few that I will say, a few that I can't. I've only ever witnessed one set of fans shout at a statue. Equally. And that's just the start of it.
Oh, I didn't expect that at all. I did not expect that one bit.
Genuinely happened. Jimmy Hill, still living rent-free. Yeah, his statue outside the Rico being shouted at, still a highlight in my humble opinion. I think I'll stop there with my attack on Sunderland because it's going to only make me look daft in about 6 weeks' time when they're promoted to the Championship.
And yeah, what has to happen now is it's what happens in media, James. You now officially have to say something good about them. So are they going to be promoted?
Yeah, they're going to be promoted, aren't they? I mean, that felt a bit like a, and I know this isn't EFL, but it felt a little bit like a Frank Lampard interview where it's all laughing. Stop and say something.
One of the great memes that... But seriously.
But in all seriousness.
And from one manager losing his mind to another who's been losing it for a few weeks now, another soundbite to add to the collection for Joey Barton.
You're thinking you've seen everything in the game. Certainly I'm thinking I've seen, you know, a team playing, certainly in the first 10 minutes, you know, like they were starting in Fawlty Towers. It was shocking and nowhere near good enough.
Fawlty Towers sort of sums it up, actually, yeah. Being in Torquay. His Bristol Rovers team could be playing in the same division as Torquay next season, I think. and that's being very kind to not only Gary Johnson in Torquay, but also my mother, a Torquay supporter. First mention for her on the podcast.
Just a many.
Well, if Torquay do get promoted, you never know. Anyway, this is the Bristol Rovers section. What I like to call the
weekly.
Our weekly check in on the History Channel, Joey Barton's conspiracy theories.
This week, Who Built Machu Picchu by Joe Barton? We've got...
It was the EFL referees.
He's lost it, hasn't he? And unfortunately, we talked earlier about teams needing to keep a cool head in big games, in big moments. They're in a bit of a mess at the moment. Let's not sugarcoat this one. I personally think they're going down. And much like I said earlier about teams showing a bit of fight, teams playing in a certain way, teams managing to keep a cool head in moments that they need to keep a cool head in, it just doesn't look like him or his Bristol Rovers side are capable of that at the moment. And unfortunately for them, I do think they're going down. And another result this weekend which proves that. They're really struggling down there. I think people expected him to come in and make a big impact. Well, he's made an impact, but not for the right reasons.
I think this goes back further than just Joey Barton or even Tisdale. I think Barton, Tisdale and Ben Garner, they don't talk to me. They all have the same win percentage.
I think of Ben Jones every time someone says that. Sorry.
Class player.
Ben
to
Jones.
Be fair, we'd all love to see Joey Barton do a backflip.
Yeah.
Or was it the point to the crowd?
Ben Jarnley did it all.
Yeah, I think the only difference between Barton and previous managers is it's less Mr. Fawlty and more Mr. Not My Fawlty. Pardon me. Yeah. I'll see myself out. But he just blames everything else. It can't be me. I got Fleetwood to a playoff final.
Yeah, you say exactly that. Like it goes back further. But if you're that good, then you change it around. I think for me, I don't know whether I'm being kind to the Bristol Rovers team here, but honestly think that on paper, they're not that bad. Maybe that's just down to the fact that they're basically a Coventry B team by the time they've signed almost everyone we've ever had. But seriously, like when I did my predictions at the start of the season in terms of where I thought teams would finish, I didn't have them going down. Maybe they've been caught out this week by the fact that Paul Cook's finally getting his message across to Ipswich and they're able to come out of the blocks sort of flying early on. And obviously two goals inside 11 minutes at the weekend meant that, similar to what I said sort of about Coventry earlier, if you're down there and sort of supposedly scrapping for points and scrapping for your safety in a division, it doesn't matter who you're playing against. You don't want to see your team concede a goal after, well, less than a minute.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're putting it into your own net, Luke Lee. And Michael Rose, for God's sake. But then also sort of backing that up. To go two down after 11 minutes, it's all it's a mountain to climb, and when you're down there and your heads are down, you're not coming back from that. It can't have been a cheap appointment. It was a big decision to change managers again in the same season to try and keep kind of to secure that position in League One. And I just don't, it's just not worked, has it? There's enough players in that team for me who are good enough to continue to play in League One. I think Lee Upson, I honestly think Westbrook, when he's fit and playing, is way too good to even be thinking about being in League Two. I don't know. They've got big problems. And it's a strange one because I said earlier about Robbins losing his job if we were to get relegated. And for the record, I'm not sure he should. But they've sacked two managers now who they've clearly decided are at fault for this run. Well, Barton's done absolutely nothing any different. How long does he get?
We want to see him talking about what they can improve on, what they can do. It's just he comes out every single week and just mentions the refereeing decisions and things. I mean, that can't be good for anyone. Who is that benefiting? And it's almost complaining about the red card for the Ipswich goalkeeper. I mean, it was never a red card a million years, that, in my opinion, for the Ipswich goalie, and it wasn't given. That's all he mentioned after the game. I mean, stick to the conspiracy theories if you're going to talk about that, Barton. Come out there. And this is one thing I think I mentioned last week about Nigel Adkins, another recent appointment in the division, who's come out and he speaks really honestly after every game about the decisions he's made and the players that are playing well and what he does differently every single game and how they're performing in training and such. And Joey Barton is just the complete opposite. It must be a part of his personality that he can't do it, where he has to blame it on something else. He can't talk about the tactics in the game. It has to be someone else's fault. I mean, I like Bristol Rovers, but I really do think they're going to go down as well.
I couldn't agree more with that, to be honest, which is a rarity on this podcast. But you're absolutely right. Like, there's just, I think the fans want you to come in. I don't think they'll actually moan as much if you're honest about it. And you just turn around and go, this is what we're working on. Okay, that hasn't worked this week. Take some responsibility yourself. There's a few young players in there as well. And even if he used that a couple of times, just to say that they're still sort of bedding the tactics in with a few young players, well, at least people would appreciate that. I think there's a few things that, now he's clearly a hell of a lot more qualified than I am. So what I might, you know, take what I say with a pinch of salt, but I look at the teams that he's picking, and Mark Little's on the bench, and you're thinking, well, he's got a bit of experience at least, who could potentially help in a relegation scrap. You've got Westbrook on the bench, who for me, I was absolutely gutted that he was let go when we got promoted to the Championship. So I think he's at least good enough for that squad at the moment. They've got Oz Toomer sat on the bench, who for at least three seasons now, people have talked about being good enough to play at a higher level. There's Daly on the bench, who I think is good enough. There's Barrett, who's played at least a couple of seasons around the level, again, who doesn't come on until the 90th minute. And he's not going to make any impact at that point. He made two substitutions out of the three in the 90th minute. I just sort of think, at what point do you go, yeah, actually, I probably should have done a little bit more myself. The tactics aren't working. His first subs in the 60th minute, and at that point, they're still 2-1 down. If you're a fan, you can see why you would get frustrated at that. I don't know. Maybe we're being a little bit harsh to him, but like you say, maybe just a bit more honesty, and you'd sort of give him that breathing room as a new manager who's coming in a difficult position. But I just, as we've both said, I don't really see them escaping the drop now. I'm not sure he was the man to come in to kind of avoid that relegation. I think, like Luke said, he did do a, you know, you joked about the Fleetwood success, but you know, he did do a good job. To get Fleetwood to a playoff final is a good job. But it's totally different to going into a club who are fighting relegation and have already had two managers in the season and don't really know what their best 11 is. So I'm not really sure, though quite a lot of people said, yeah, that's quite a big appointment. I'm not sure it was the right one for the position that they're in. And I really worry for them now. And I don't see them staying up, unfortunately.
Almost didn't want to turn it into a football match, if that makes sense.
Michael Duff last week there, claiming the 3 points whilst trying not to play football. A massive 4-0 win against fellow promotion hunters Tranmere. Perhaps this week they were trying to play football, and what a win.
Well, you say that because 4-0 clearly means like you've wiped the floor with your opponents, but it just seemed like volleyball. Three goals from throw-ins. All the highlights were just Rory Delap, Pulis, Gold.
And what more could you want from League Two, realistically? It's just a brilliant league. You can play any way you want and you still don't know who's going to win. And those long throws are absolutely unbelievable. Why do teams still give away throw-ins against Cheltenham? Do anything. I'd rather give away a corner, to be honest, against the Cheltenham this season than a throw-in. And every time they get one, Big Ben Tozer steps up and you're just thinking, here we go, another goal.
Yeah, it was. I think it first came into prominence, if that's the right word for a Cheltenham long throw, which is the, the playoffs last season? I think they lost in the semi-final, did they? And that's where it first caught my eye anyway, was the Ben Tozer long throws. I mean, it happened, it was twice in that game, wasn't it? I mean, one was a real scrap and a goal. But you can't really say the other one was a long throw. Comes out to the edge of box. Incredible volley from outside. Yes, it came from the long throw, but is that the real reason?
No, hats off to the volley. Especially as he's got his left foot planted, right? He's got his left foot planted for a good 3 seconds before he hits it because he knows exactly where it's going to land. And then he just thumps it into the top left-hand corner. I'm still saying it. It's coming from a throw because three of them have come within 30 seconds of a throw. So, you know, if you want to call it anti-football, well, that's what I'm calling it. It's somewhat anti-football, but it's entertaining at the same time. Like, you look forward to the Cheltenham highlights on Quest.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where you wish fans were in the ground because every time Cheltenham got one of those... Yeah, he's doing it already. He's doing it already. Yeah, you've been up to the Cotswolds, have you? You've been doing it. But, I mean, can you say anti-football about a team who are sat in second in League Two at the moment?
On this podcast, you can say what you want.
It's very inclusive. Rare to say anything about League Two.
In all seriousness, I found myself saying that quite a lot tonight. Cheltenham on an absolute roll and massive win for them, to be honest. Puts them, 5 points clear now, I think, of Tranmere in fourth. And with a game in hand on top, who's Cambridge at the moment, and just 2 points behind them, they really are looking like a team who are going to go up automatically this season. And it's always nice, in my opinion, to see a team sort of build on a sort of failed playoff run from the season before. You can see the kind of impact that can have on a team, and often after they don't go up in the playoffs, they then struggle to ever kind of come back from that and don't finish up there in the following season. But to see Cheltenham be able to do it this season has been really good, and they have got a bit of everything. I know those long throws have contributed to a lot of games, but they play in quite a nice fashion, and they do have a little bit of everything. And I think that's probably what Duff was sort of alluding to last week in that interview about not wanting it to be much of a football match, which does sound very strange. But I think, you know, tactically he's got it right a lot this season. And yeah, what a season they've had so far, and with not too many to go, they look like one of the sides that will grab an automatic spot.
Would you say he's making the decisions? It didn't sound like that by his post-match, because it sounds like someone else is ruling the roost at Cheltenham Town.
I think you must be referring to Duff's comments there about Boyle refusing to come off the pitch. His words were, I was going to take Boyle off, but he pretty much threatened to knock me out, so I left him be. Not many of them are bigger than me, but he is. So yeah, clearly, Boyle's wanted to stay on there, and because he's a big lad. He's managed to call a couple of shots and, well, at 4-0, maybe keep letting him make the decision, Duffy boy.
It's not the fact that he's refused to come off. He said, I'll knock him out. That's your own manager. I'll knock you out. I will. I'll do it.
Second in the league, 4-0 up. I'll knock you out.
Yes. Passion.
And whilst we're talking about four goals and a fight, Bradford City. We've all talked about that kind of management duo this season and just how well they've done since they took that job on. But I can see Andy's face there. He's absolutely loved it, to be honest. 4-1 against the Forest Green Rovers, who, let's be honest, are doing well this season. And what a run Bradford have put together. Two more goals for Cook. Someone that, again, we've spoken a bit about this season. Great win for Bradford. And I think last week, Luke said something along the lines of Forest Green having to settle for a playoff spot. And it looks like he might not be wrong.
Yeah, I alluded to that because Jamil Matt's injury that's probably going to put him out to the end of the season. But there's no way that one informed striker is going to outscore four goals of Bradford City. But I think Mark Cooper at Forest Green is going to have to settle for playoffs at the moment because there's no way that they seem to be stopping Bradford City at the moment.
Yeah, you talk about Forest Green and I think it was one of those games, if you looked at the stats before the scoreline, you wouldn't quite believe it. Forest Green with 64% possession, 14 shots on goal, eight corners, and you're thinking, God, there's no chance they've been beaten. 4-1 loss there. So, yeah, obviously, you talk about the fact that it's a striker that's missing for them at the moment, and the fact that they've had that many shots and that much possession, you're absolutely right. It's probably going to be a big miss for them. And if they do get into those playoffs, which they should do from here on out, you're sort of hoping that he'll come back and sort of be the difference for them. But it's going to be a tough old running for them from here on.
Yeah, I just, Luke, I think, said last week, I called him up on something that he claimed a club wasn't going to make it into the top two or make it into the playoffs. I mean, Forest Green, they're just sitting 2 points outside of the top three. So, I mean, it's another really big claim that just because Jamil Matt is gone, that they're definitely not going to make it. They're a team that I've liked for a while. I still think they could have something. Obviously, it's two losses on the bounce, which is far from ideal. And I think they could still be involved, is basically what I'm saying. Basically, I want to say, Luke, that was a bit far.
You said it was a different team. It was, in fact, Forest Green last week as well. So it's still the same
claim. Was it?
Still the same claim.
Was it?
And still shutting him down. Yeah.
Are you sure?
We talked about the fact that Bolton had beaten them, yeah, and that was Bolton going to be going up. So still a harsh claim.
If anything, that still just backs up my point even further. That it's just Luke's got some sort of hidden agenda. Well, not hidden agenda, just plain in sight agenda against Forest Green. Luke's quiz. Edit that in.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we paid homage to Dean Lewington. Can't remember how many appearances he made. It was like 800, 900, 4,000. I can't remember. He is 36 years old and 11 months. So he's nearly 37. Man. So I'm looking for players this week, players older than Dean Lewington. So I'm looking for EFL players that are older, 37 years old and older.
I've got three, but I cannot see myself getting more than that. Yeah, there's three pretty obvious
ones. One.
James, there's three pretty obvious ones, baby.
I'll tell you now.
James goes first. No, James is first this week. Right, take it away.
23 to get, players older than Dean Lewington.
By the way, you said we paid homage to Dean Lewington. I believe I said he was on his way out. Strange way.
He's what? He's 32.
800 by 32. What a career that is. He's scored 8,092 goals.
I've genuinely got no idea. Honestly, I'm out after one, eh?
Who's your one then, James? Who's your one?
I will use my.
Can
I say
it? Is this guy? He's bloody stalling, Rat.
I just want to say it, but you're talking. Okay, I think there's only one place to really kick this off, and that is with our good friend, scream in the face, Kevin Ellison.
Yeah, 42 years and a month old. Not even, I'll tell you this, not even the oldest player in the EFL.
Oh. I'll reply with another legend. Well, I assume they're all going to be legends. James Coppinger.
40 years old.
I've got nothing left.
Ian Beale has joined the podcast.
Got nothing left.
I have one. Just to put some pressure on James.
I've got one, but I'm not even sure if he's still playing or if he stopped or if it's, I just don't know. So I'm going to have to just say it.
No, it sounds like it's mine. It sounds like it could be my answer. F*** you.
Is Horse League One?
No. Okay, good.
Neither's mine.
No, mine's championship.
Is your... Oh, I'll just keep saying, is yours... narrowing it down till I can get yours. I think I might be out. I genuinely think I might be out, so I'm just going to have to say it. Glenn Whelan?
Oh, 37 and 4 months. Yeah, he's played this season.
Did we have how many answers there were?
Well, you've got 3 of them already, so there are 20 left.
Jesus Christ! I have one. I have one here that I'll rattle off quickly to put him under pressure. Joby McAnuff.
39.
He lied. He lied when I said... Is it
yes, me? I know. Is it he was league two.
Okay, there are 4 in the championship, 4 in league
Jesus.
One.
Jesus.
No, I've got one. I've got one.
And 11 in league two.
It's got to get 2 right now because I've got one.
All right, you just keep saying it.
Oh, the pressure. I imagine acting this confident when you're literally 4 behind in the rankings.
The fact you've said the championship disappoints me because it means that realistically...
My one is in the championship as well, just to say that.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Luke, hover over that incorrect button, please.
He's put some serious pressure on, demanding 2 here. 2 from me. Even if I get this one, I'm still dead. So what's the point anymore? Really falling out of love with the game. Okay. I'm not sure if this person is old enough or older than Kevin Ellison or not.
Older than Kevin Ellison? You'd have to go
There's
that
one
old.
Player older than Kevin Ellison.
You have to get older than 37. Oh,
sorry.
Going for a 44-year-old.
Glenn Murray.
37 and a half.
I'm going to give you Adebayo Akinfenwa. Oh,
that's all I had left.
38 and 10 months, Adebayo Akinfenwa.
You can either take this as true or not, but James, I have another one.
He's bluffing.
Well, it doesn't matter, does it? That just means he has to get 2 more. Actually, what if he names mine?
Yeah, you've got 2 more in the championship, 4 in League One, and 11 in League Two.
I've got one. Yeah.
You keep saying you've got 5. Yeah. Well done.
Oh no, I'm out. Or am I? I'll never tell.
The secret is in the frosting, but I'll never tell.
Okay, I need to concentrate now because if he names my one, I'm out.
I'll have to have a complete gamble that this guy is old enough. It's Luke's EFL England 11 goalkeeper.
You absolute knob. I know he's 38 for a fact. For f***'s sake. How's he won this game? How's he won it? I won this.
What a knob.
You can't do that. Oh, for God's sake.
What I love is I didn't even know if it was right or not. I've not even finished the sentence.
I knew that was right.
And he goes, you knob. Are you sure it's right? He's 38, is he, Ben Foster? Right, I better say it anyway.
Yeah, 38.
Oh, no. I was so cocky, wasn't I? That was so deserved. Oh, my God. Do you know what I was about to say? Dean Lewington. Not even joking. I got excited. It just hit me. Oh, my God. What an idiot. Just too much pressure comes on, doesn't it? And then out of nowhere... comes the answer, which begins with
how long has he had been here, Rest?
Darren Prattley. I mean, he's not, he must.
No, it's another West, and that makes it 9-4.
Do you want me?
Such a huge lead.
Would you like my answer that's going to kill you, Andy?
The silence says yes.
Wesley Houlihan.
38 and 10 months. Right, I'm going to go through the ones first that I think were very, very tough outsiders, never been mentioned on the pod. Clayton Donaldson at Bradford, Alan McCormack at Southend, Glenn Morris at Crawley, Sam Russell at Grimsby, Stuart Nelson at Crawley, Peter Clark at Tranmere, Joe Murphy at Tranmere. The oldest player in the EFL, Danny Bullman, plays for Crawley. He's 42 years old and 2 months.
Jesus.
Hasn't played in 3 months, but he's the oldest player in the EFL. Chris Porter at Crewe, Andy Butler at Doncaster, Gary Roberts at Accrington Stanley. So I'll move on to the players that you might have heard, a little bit more obvious. The only player left in the Championship, Matt Bloomfield, 37, just turned 37.
Wait, is it Wickham, isn't he?
yeah,
because I almost said Joe Jacobson. How old is he? He's obviously not 37.
Luke Varney at Burton Albion, 38 and a half. A couple that have been mentioned on the podcast. Matt Jilks for Bolton. An EFL hero, Harrogate Town. Have a guess.
What's his name? God, Bristol City for a bit. Jesus, what's his name? Blonde guy.
What's his name? John Stead.
Jesus.
Yeah. He's 38 on that. Wednesday. 38 to be on fair, Wednesday. Happy birthday, John Stead.
To be fair, apart from Houlihan, I don't think I would.
Tough ones in there.
It was very tough. Yeah, and Foot Like a Traction Engine sums up my choice this week for Goal of the Week. A lot of people's favourite segment of the show, I've heard, because we always pick some great goals. And I'm sort of well known now for picking some great goals, but this week I will. We talked earlier about Bartosz Bielakowski, that is saving Millwall at one end of the pitch. But the person who often saves Millwall at the end of the pitch, Jed Wallace. Foot Like a Traction Engine just absolutely sums that one up. I think you'll both agree. The ball comes over from a corner, misses everyone, classic. He's just stood there at the end, volleys it first time, as you have to do with a volley. And it's absolutely flown into the top corner. The near post as well, but absolutely no chance for the keeper. And yeah, unbelievable hit. And that's my goal of the week.
Well, I'm rather disappointed because I've gone for a rather poor goal. I've gone for quite the opposite. Now, I've watched this goal back a few times and it's so much happens in the space of 30 seconds. It's hard to believe it's in the first minute of the match. It's almost like poetry. So I'm going to say it as poetry. So are you ready for this?
No.
This is a story called Barton's Conspiracy Theories. You're not ready.
What are we talking? Is it just a little like, is it a limerick or a little haiku or how long have we got?
I'm going to explain the goal. I'm going to double
it. It's not a sonnet, is it?
Oh, Luke, put the guitar down.
I'm going to dub over some nice, like, story-esque music. And I would say it's going to make it seem better, but it's definitely not.
Okay, let's sit back and take our headphones out.
Fall asleep.
A long ball's played forward. A headed clearance goes backwards from Baldwin. Tutonda goes for a header as well. Again, the ball goes backwards. Great defending. Caden Jackson's then through on goal. His shot's blocked by George Williams, who wipes out his fellow defender, Jack Baldwin, in the process. The ball falls to David Tutonda again, who tries to clear, but he boots the ball against Quia Edwards.
Stop, I'm going to have to stop you. I have to.
No.
How is this a poem?
It's poetry. Just, but you got to believe me. The ball flies back towards the Bristol Rovers goal. And Jacola in the Bristol Rovers goal is about to save it. He's about to save it. First minute of the match. At which point, Luke Leahy sticks a foot out. The ball loops over his own goalkeeper's head, off the post and into the back of the net. Not even a minute has passed. 1-0 to Ipswich. And tell me that's not art.
Are I supposed to now vote for that?
That's not
art. It'll sound better when I've dubbed some lovely music over the top.
I think I'm not alone here in thinking you were actually going to tell a proper poem.
Yeah, you're not just alone.
There were going to be rhymes.
Rhymes. I was waiting for rhymes. Anyone?
Unbelievably terrible. Unbelievably
Should we move on from that quickly?
To be fair, just before we move on, I'm actually annoyed because I enjoyed that goal because it was an own goal in the first minute. I mean, got to get behind that, haven't you? An own goal in the first minute, get behind it. But Luke's ruined it, as usual.
I've brought a goal along with me. I thought for artistic effect, I would sing about... So I hope you've got 3.5 minutes.
Yeah. Turns out you're just going to read the lyrics that don't rhyme instead.
My goal this week, we've discussed already, and I'm not going to go on about it. Bento's a long throw in, one of the most effective weapons in the EFL. Long ball into the box, just when you think it's been cleared. Edge of the area, Callum Wright balances himself. Boom, on the volley, top corner. Nothing quite like it.
Are you sure there's nothing quite like it?
Just like poetry should be, short and sweet. So, unlike what we heard earlier.
Well, I guess we'd better vote, and clearly neither of us are going to be voting for that absolute mess of a poem thing that we just heard. I think I find myself struggling to vote against a Millwall last minute... Well, not last minute, so shut up. I find myself struggling to vote against a... Millwall Jed Wallace volley against a side that really I need to lose between now and the end of the season every single game they play. So I think my vote has to go this week to Sir Jed Wallace.
It's almost as if I picked it for that very reason. And it's won. Cheers, Jed. But what a goal as well. Come on.
Luke, are you going to be swayed away from the poem? Yeah. A poem about Jed, maybe?
Well, actually, you have go and bury it in the garden.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Well, boys, it is, of course, the final section of the podcast, the high risk, high reward. Let's not reflect on last week. No one won. No one ever wins. What you got?
Well, we've had Joey Barton talking about conspiracy theories. I think the perfect trifecta of Joey Bartonness is going to happen in this. They've got Northampton next week. Northampton, the only team in the bottom six to win last week. I think I'm going to predict the perfect storm for Joey Barton next week. I'm going to go for Bristol Rovers red card. Bristol Rovers give away a penalty, and Joey Barton to say the words conspiracy theory in his post match. All three to happen. That's my high risk, high reward.
Beautiful. And it's nothing we'd love to see more. And I'm glad it wasn't in the form of a poem. Andy?
I'm staying on the managerial front as we normally actually do. I don't know how much of a high risk this is, but I'm going to say Tony Mowbray, this will be his very last game as Blackburn manager. You can argue with me if you want, if you think that's not risky enough.
Medium risk. Medium reward.
I've said it, so it automatically means it's a high reward. They play Bournemouth at home. Makes it even less because they may lose that one. And I'll caveat it slightly by saying I was going to also pick a Joey Barton one, but Luke picked it first, so I had to quickly change my mind. James, what have you got?
Okay, well, I'm going to stick with you on the managerial front this time, and I'm going to go with Nigel Pearson at Bristol City. He's got a little bit angry that he's not been offered a contract past summer, said if they wait till summer to give him a new contract, it will be too late, in his words. I think we might just get a result against them on Monday. It doesn't really matter if we do or don't for my prediction, to be honest. Prediction, Nigel Pearson to walk after Monday's game.
I like that prediction because that's something we should have talked about a bit earlier. We like Nigel Pearson, well, in a way to laugh at him. So there's some good high risk, high rewards there for us. Maybe will we find a winner before the end of the season? Who knows?
Now, all that leaves us to do
is say thank you very much and see you next week.
See you next Monday, guys.
See you next week, fellas.
As always, I'm joined by Andy.
Pleasure.
Man of many words.
Why not? Why not? This guy almost said speaking.
Speaking. Jesus Christ. What a start. Andy's in turmoil.
It's his fault.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe it.
I nearly said speaking.
As if that would have been better.
Speaking. Joining me, Andrew Aiden, speaking. Wouldn't have worked. Wouldn't have made any sense.